All right, I call the House Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order. And thank you, everybody, for being here. I'm going to go through a couple things first, and then we'll have my bill up. First, we'll hand it over to Vice Chair Ream, co-Vice Chair Ream. But first, we'll have approval of the minutes. Representative Koznick, do you have a motion for the minutes of February 25th, 2026?
Thank you, Chair Tabke. Looking them over real quickly here. I would move the minutes for February 25th, 2026, please.
Any discussion on the minutes of February 26th, 2026? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. All right, so today we are missing a member on the DFL side, and so Representative Katie Jones had her baby on Friday, and its name is Hans. And it's the cutest little thing for sure. And so really excited about Representative Jones and her family. And so she will be obviously not here today, but we wish her and the family all well and excited to have her back when it works for her. So the other thing before we get going on the meeting today is I want to make sure just to recognize the fact that we have quite a few heavy topics on odd for a transportation committee hearing, but we'll be talking a lot, as before we get into it, a lot about June 14th and the murder, assassination of Mark and Melissa Hortman, and don't forget Gilbert on there. And so just wanted to make sure everybody knows that we'll be discussing those things today and have some heavy topics. So I just appreciate everyone's compassion and cooperation as we go through these tough times. So now we'll pass the gavel over to Representative Ream for House File 3418.
Right, so the next bill is HF 3418. Chair Tabke, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Vice Chair Ream, I would like to move House File 3418 for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill.
And let's see, I see you have an author's amendment here.
Yes, I'd like to offer the, let's see, it's the A1, right?
Yes.
I lost my notes here. The A1 amendment, which just gets the bill, fixes a couple technical things and gets the bill in the shape that I'd like.
Great. Are there any member questions on the A1 author's amendment? Not? All those in favor of the A1 author's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None? So that has been approved. Would you like to please explain your bill?
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes. Chair Koznick.
I do not have a copy of that A1 amendment in my packet. Do you guys? Could we have the page make us a copy if there are somewhere? Then
thank
just
you,
go
Chair.
Ahead and
yes, we will explain the page make us some copies. But if you would like to go ahead, Chair Tabke, and explain the bill, if that's possible, that would be great.
Yeah, thank you very much. So this summer, a highly unfortunate incident happened where there's the death of a young boy as he was crossing the street in Moorhead, Minnesota this summer. And I was honored to be asked by Representative Keeler to join her in Moorhead for a community discussion about this particular intersection where the boy was run over. It's a four-way stop, and the boy was run over by a city truck. And it was just an unfortunate incident all around. And he died in front of his mother and his sister. And it was just extremely, extremely sad. And so it's something that I believe we can do good work here at the state of Minnesota to help prevent these kinds of accidents coming and moving forward into the future. And so this bill, just so you know, has some more work and some more things to get done with it as this goes forward. So that's why we're laying it over today to continue on that work. But the premise and the idea behind the bill is to make sure that community has the opportunity to weigh in for safety projects and weigh in and have a voice that can be heard and a voice that can be listened to on these types of projects. And so what happened in this instance from the community's perspective is that they knew that this intersection was unsafe. There was a residential neighborhood on one side of the road. It was a large, busy road with a four-way stop at a school, and the family was going to get lunch at school this summer. And so they had the community had the neighborhood had talked to the city many, many times about the fact that something needed to happen in this intersection because it was unsafe. And so the city was rightfully concerned with making sure that they do the proper studies and make sure they get through the right red tape and make sure they do all the right things in the right order. And so what this bill would do would be to push through red tape. It would be to make sure that we have the right solutions or that we have solutions for communities in order to make intersections more safe for pedestrians and bikers across the state. And so it would be an opt-in system for communities to opt into this program. And so when they opt in, we use the Office of Traffic Safety in order to make sure that from there we have pre-made templates that are 80% done so that when we have these issues like a four-way stop, which is a standard problem that we have in many, many areas, that this is a solution that will work for a four-way stop, whether it is narrowing lanes, whether it is adding rumble strips, whatever it may be that's the right solution for that, that it will not have to have years, months and years worth of studies done, that will cut through all the red tape and be able to get these projects completed. And so what the amendment does is it adds that the state will pick up 80% of those projects in order to make sure that we're able to get them done fast and so that we aren't waiting months and years for these types of projects to get done. And again, this is only for communities to opt into these types of projects and move them forward, because as we talked about last week, we have a problem with pedestrian safety in the state of Minnesota and all over, and we need to do everything we can to make sure that we are keeping people as safe as possible. And with that, Madam Vice Chair, we have, I'm not sure if she's on the Zoom or not, and hopefully Zoom worked better this week than it did last week, but we have Nicole Mattson from Moorhead to testify.
Good afternoon.
Yes, thank you. If you could please state your name, too.
Sure. I'm Nicole Mattson from Moorhead.
Great, thank you. Please proceed.
While I am a Moorhead City Council member, today I am testifying on my own behalf and not behalf of the City of Moorhead or the Council. I'm here in support of House File 3418. As Representative Tapke noted, last summer our community experienced a tragedy when we lost 9-year-old Adam Amin, who was riding his bike and was struck by a truck while he was in a crosswalk. And 3 weeks later, we had the community conversation that Representative Tapke mentioned, along with Representative Keeler. We learned a lot in that meeting from transportation planner Dan Farnsworth. One of the things was that a pedestrian hit by a vehicle going 23 miles an hour has a 10% risk of being killed. A pedestrian hit by a vehicle going 42 miles per hour has a 50% risk of being killed. And kids in our community regularly travel to school on streets where drivers exceed 42 miles per hour. The next thing we learned is that it's not that hard to slow down traffic with relatively inexpensive and easy solutions like paint and bollards. With the funding proposed in House File 3418, our city could have slowed down traffic before this school year started and could have made an immediate difference for our kids. We are working on some bigger engineering solutions, but those are going to take some time to implement. And it would have been much quicker and easier and less expensive to put up some bollards right away. Spring in Moorhead started when our historic Dairy Queen opened for the season yesterday, which means we'll soon see more kids out on bikes and scooters. House File 3418 has the potential to make those kids safer with a relatively small financial investment. And that's something we should all be able to get behind. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any other additional testifiers, Chair Tapke? Would any members of the public like to testify? Okay. Seeing no additional testifiers, are there any member questions? Representative Sensormira.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Tapke, for bringing this bill. I think it makes a lot of sense. And I just want to also give credit to Representative Keeler, who I know has done a lot of work on this issue coming out of just a terrible tragedy. I really like in the legislation having kind of the pre-made templates. I think we know a lot about what makes roads safer, and so I like not having to reinvent the wheel and kind of just giving communities options and letting them think through. I do, you know, I think something to continue to work on and think about is how do you ensure that just because a community has a loud voice doesn't necessarily mean that they actually are the community that is most deserving of tax dollars to do this kind of project. I know that the city of Minneapolis got a large amount of money from a federal grant a couple years ago to do, you know, traffic safety aid and to do traffic safety, you know, projects on streets. And one of the things that we ran into was sometimes a certain community can get a bunch of people to write in, sign a petition, and then you actually go and you're like, yeah, people could drive safer on the street compared to 10 other streets. It's not as bad. And sometimes you just think the street you live on is the most important, but that doesn't necessarily make it so. So would want to kind of see that continue to be worked on. And just want to bring up, you know, I know that Representative Jones has done some work on this, and I've looked into it too, like the MSA roads and what the limitations on the kinds of traffic safety improvements we can do on MSA roads, I think is something that this committee should continue to do work on. You know, this incident in Moorhead was in front of a school. I know that I have gotten a lot of concerns from people in my community specifically about roads that are by parks where people are driving really fast, and some of those are MSA roads. And so, you know, with an MSA road, there are limitations on the kinds of things you can do to slow people down. I think specifically you can't do speed bumps. And one of the reasons is, you know, well, these are roads where freight needs to travel and we need to move goods fast across our state. And that seems to me in conflict with a road by a park where we need to keep kids safe. So I think that's something we need to continue to do work on in this area. The last thing I want to say is I know people hate bollards, but I like them and I don't care.
Chair, Co-Chair Tapke, do you have a response? Yep.
Thank you. I agree with everything that you said through there. I believe that MSA roads definitely have different solutions that they need to have depending on the context and where that road is located. And we do have to find a way in this bill, which I think the best possible solution would be make sure that we had enough funding in order to make sure that we're taking care of all dangerous intersections that communities are concerned about. But I don't see that as being a possibility with things. And so we do have to find a better way to handle that threshold for what community deems and where it is, and whether that's just depending on how much funding we're able, if we're able to get funding into this, if it's just one per community or something like that, as to how it works, and we'll figure out, or per capita or that kind of thing. So you're totally right.
Any other member? Okay. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Tapke, this bill, you know, with no appropriation worries me a little bit, but I know Moorhead did respond to that accident, which was tragic, about putting a roundabout. They approved it, put in a roundabout in there. And then also, you know, the driver had some expired licensing on driving that truck too, and I know he's been let go. But I think this bill is going in the right direction. I just think it needs some more work on it with the appropriation part of making sure that we, what city call, what doesn't. But yeah, response of Moorhead putting a roundabout in right away and just talking about it and get ahead of it is good. So thank you.
Chair Tapke. Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. I'm curious if the department has any comments or concerns or suggestions on the bill, or is that something we're going to do after? Otherwise, I'll just raise some concerns. I'm looking at you. Don't have to be total concerns. You can have suggestions, too.
And if you could state your name, please.
Yeah, Jake Reuter. I'm the Active Transportation Unit Supervisor with MnDOT's Office of Transit and Active Transportation. Co-Chair Kosnick, Vice Chair, members of the committee, thanks for your interest in this topic. It is certainly something that is also of keen interest to those of us working in the walking and biking space at MnDOT. One thing that I would ask to bring to your attention is that MnDOT, through its Safe Routes to School and Active Transportation programs, does support community-based demonstration projects already. To date, since 2019, we've supported about 30 of these types of projects through the Safe Routes to School program and the Active Transportation program. MnDOT on its own has taken on probably in the neighborhood of 12 to 15 of these projects on its system to try and advance quick responses to pedestrian safety challenges. And so one of the things that we're interested in is finding a way to work within those programs to make sure that we're clear about the different goals for each program, that I think we're all working towards the same ultimate end goal here, which is improving safety for our most vulnerable users of the transportation system, and just making sure we're finding the best and most efficient way to do that.
Chair Costner.
Thank you, and I appreciate the discussion, of course. Looking through the fiscal note, I think that's why we're going to lay it over and have some issues to work out. The assumption of every other year, $10 million a biennium is probably one of the biggest notes. Thank you for your testimony suggesting or highlighting that we already have a couple programs. My question was going to be is how do we currently handle that? But we have Safe Routes to Schools and active transportation planning, and then back to the fiscal note, we're adding on top of that and some extra FTEs. So we'll continue to work on that. Of course, nobody wants to see people get hit and run over or deaths for sure. But we have programs in place. We'll continue to work and see how we can revise this if there's a particular intersection or something that we want to address more specifically or not. But obviously, that, as Chair Tapke, the author, has mentioned, that there's a couple things to work out on the fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick and Chair Tapke.
Thank you. And I'd just like to respond to that. And you're totally right, Chair Kosnick, that the intent of this is for it to feather in and work together with existing programs. And so that's where we're at with Office of Traffic Safety and other folks. And as we mentioned with the Safe Routes to School, but not everything lives within the context of a Safe Routes to School. This, the one that we're talking about in Moorhead, happened to happen at a school, but there are a lot of other issues and other places where we want, I want to make sure that communities have the ability and the power to get things done. Like, I think that's what our communities are asking us for, is to not go through months and years of study, that this will make things happen within 90 days.
Seeing no further discussion, thank you, Chair Tapke. HF3418 is laid over.
All right, thank you very much, Vice Chair Ream. Now we will take up House File 3739. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3739 to Ways and Means.
Chair Cagle moves House File 3739 to Ways and Means. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, there's an A. You want to do the A1 amendment? Sorry.
Oh, yes.
I lost my pen, so I'm trying to find that. Apologize. So there is an A1 amendment. Will you please move the A1 amendment?
I would move the A1 amendment to House File 3739. And this just clarifies the appropriations.
The A1 is the. So, this is your amendment, Chair Kosnick? Or is this Representative?
Yeah. No, this is not an amendment.
Got it. Thank you, Chair. Chair Kosnick, the A1 amendment.
Thank you. Appreciate the intent, of course. And as we've done other memorials, somewhat consistently, I suppose. I think we had three in the last bill. The signage in that was paid for by private funds. That's an established policy, I believe, by MnDOT. And so whether it's police officers, which is usually, I'm trying to think, the last three that we had were two of them were police officers, first responders. Another one was a military that we passed most recently. And those were all funded with private funds. And so that's what this amendment does is takes existing funds from both the House and the Senate legislative budgets and pays for it that way, as opposed to trunk highway funds. As we've seen, we have a deficit in terms of maintaining our roads, a very, very large and significant one. In fact, a lot of automotive taxes, transportation taxes were increased to help minimize that a number of years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago. And so I think I'm concerned about setting a policy where we continue to use trunk highway funds for everything other than trunk highways. And so that's what this amendment does.
Appreciate that. We're going to hold off on voting on that for just a moment because I did this in the wrong order. I should have had Chair Cagle go through the bill first to explain what it does, and then Chair Kozik will. The A1 amendment has been moved, but we'll come back to you in just a moment. So, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, of course, this is the bill that would memorialize Mark and Melissa Hortman, who were killed on June 14, 2025, because of Melissa's service to the state. I was having lunch just today and was telling somebody in the caucus room about my bill. And then I remembered my driving down County Road 81 in my 1993 Nissan Sonata. And there was a stop sign at Winnetka, and being a 17-year-old distracted driver, I ran into the person in front of me at that stop sign, and traffic would back up at that stop sign every day. It was one of the few places that you could get across the river over into Anoka County, and I had forgotten about that accident, but that road is now Highway 610, and that was something that Melissa worked on, and I have a picture of here. I know we're not supposed to use props, but this is a picture of Melissa during the groundbreaking of Highway 610. This was a really big deal to her. It was a thoroughfare in her community, and it still is one of the river crossings that we use daily to get from the east side of the river to the west side. And it wasn't until recently that this project was 100% completed up to 94. And I can't imagine just the amount of accidents that happened in that corridor prior to there not being a stop sign at Winnetka. And so I'm really proud to bring this bill forward because it is a road I use often. And so I'm very much looking forward to seeing a sign up there that says that this is the 610 Hortman Memorial Highway. And the family chose the Hortman Memorial Highway because they wanted to make sure that both Mark and Melissa and Gilbert were honored. And it's a part of our community in the Northern Metro. It spans all the way from kind of Rogers to, well, the river. And so I just really appreciate that I was able to carry this Memorial Highway legislation for Melissa and for the family, and selfishly for me, so that when I drive that freeway or that highway, I get to see Melissa's name there every single time. And I think this is kind of one of the least of the things that we can do as a state, being that Melissa served a lot, you know, over 20 years here. Her family was raised here. Her family was a part of this place. And so I just hope that we can get this passed in Melissa's honor. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative Scraba, do you have comment on the amendment or on the bill itself? Because I'd rather get the amendment out of the way first.
Question on the bill.
Let's hold on to that first for a moment, and let's address the amendment. Chair Kozik, did you want to vote on this, or did you want to withdraw this, or where were you at on it? Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Representative Kraft?
Yeah. Chair Tappy, how are we dealing with it? I didn't hear what.
We're just having a voice vote on it.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would suggest a no vote on this amendment. Again, you know, Melissa spent a big chunk of her life here and sacrificed a lot of her time with her family. And so, you know, we will be getting a fiscal note on this bill in Ways and Means. And so I would recommend a no vote on this right now.
Closing comments, Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. I already spoke to the use of trunk highway funds and the established parameters within MnDOT policy. And then also maybe we'll talk about the length of the memorial overall and when in the underlying bill. So we can just proceed to the voice vote.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? No.
No, sorry.
The motion does not prevail. All right, the amendment is not adopted. So discussion, Representative Scraba.
Chair and Representative, how long is the mileage or?
Representative Cagle.
I can tell you it's from Mississippi River over to Highway 94. I can Google the mileage if you'd like me to. But it's probably, you know, 10, 12-mile stretch, I would think. I don't know. Eric, am I up? I'm getting 10 or 11 over here.
Representative Scraba.
That's good. Thank you.
Additional questions? Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. And, you know, I appreciate what we're trying to do, and I'm sure at the end of session we'll figure something out. We're going to send this to the Ways and Means Committee with a number of other issues to be worked out. Just want to recall to the committee, I wasn't the author, and there was a bill to memorialize a stretch of road for a person through Scott and Dakota County that was very active in the transportation sector and actually built a lot of the roads. Thought it was a nice gesture to somebody who was so involved in transportation at the time. We did not really question or think to question, this was a couple years ago, the length of the road. And it winds all the way over from the western part of Scott County all the way through Dakota County. And it, I heard about it from the county commissioners quite a bit about the signage and the work and the cost that went into it. So I also have the same concern here. I think we could work on putting it in the area that Speaker Hortman actually represented in her community. And so those will be discussions that will be had, I guess, not exactly here today, but will be had before we pass this off to the floor.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this forward. My biggest concern falls along the amendment that we just had from Chair Kosnick. Melissa was a hero. She gave the ultimate sacrifice. Her family did as well, and they're suffering as a result of it. Understanding that, it's also important to recognize that the other individuals in this state who have highways memorialized to them, many of them were heroes themselves, and their organizations found the sums of money to pay for those signs. I have no doubt that even if you just ask the members amongst this legislature to come up with those funds out of the goodness of their own heart, I'm sure you could come up with it. It's generally about $4,000 for the signage necessary. I don't know if the taxpayers should have to pay for this one when they didn't pay for other ones in the past. I think that we potentially open the door to a situation where we never return. You know, if we're notwithstanding this statute, tomorrow, when someone else believes that a hero has performed a duty that deserves a memorial highway, I fear that we're going to continue that policy of notwithstanding. I'm sure that we could come up with the money necessary to memorialize Melissa and Mark from our own dollars, and I think that we should do it with private funds. So that's just me making that statement, thinking that that would be the appropriate way of doing this. And recognize the heroics that occurred from those individuals.
Any response, Representative Cagle?
Is that the end of discussion?
No. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing the bill. I think one thing that was coming to my mind on the whole thing is there's a lot of people that I think would like to be involved in paying for it. You know, it's just something good that people can do. And so rather than us breaking into a different way of this is the time that we pay for this or don't pay for this, there are a lot of folks that would love to be able to give, including ourselves, to be able to give on something like this where we don't have to ask the taxpayer to foot it, but I think there's people that will step up. So that would be my comment on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? I'm going to comment here for a moment. Never in the history of the state of Minnesota has someone been murdered for being a legislator. Never in the history of the state of Minnesota has someone been and their spouse been assassinated as a sitting member of the House or Senate for political motivations. I appreciate the discussion. I don't disagree that there should be discussion on these kinds of things. But if ever there were to be a time that this is a project of the state of Minnesota, I believe that this is now. I don't believe this is setting historic precedent. I think everyone understands that this is an unprecedented situation. And again, appreciate the comment, the conversation about it. I just very much believe that the state of Minnesota is together and a partner on getting this done. Chair Cagle, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I just want to echo that what Chair Tapke said is this is a very unique situation. Melissa was murdered, assassinated because of her service to the state. She was a very important piece of the community, and not just the community that she represented. She was Speaker of the House of the state of Minnesota. And she will stand as one of the most influential politicians in Minnesota history. I don't want anybody in the state of Minnesota to ever forget Melissa Hortman. And I think this is one of the least of the things that we can do to make sure that her legacy moves on. And so with that, I would renew my motion to move House File 3739 to Ways and Means.
Thank you very much, Representative Cagle. Renews your motion that House File 3739 be referred to Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Now we're going to move with House File 3791. Representative Green. When you get situated, if you could please move your bill, which is being laid over. But if you please move House File 3791.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. I move House File 3791 to be laid over for possible inclusion down the road.
Thank you very much. If you please explain your bill.
Thank you. First, I just want to say thank you to our Sergeant-at-Arms, State Patrol, and Capitol Security for their tireless vigilance, their steady presence, and their unwavering commitment to protect those who serve. It has been an unprecedented year, and I just want to acknowledge that work. The threat environment related to elected and public officials in Minnesota is measurable and has resulted in violent outcomes. According to our own Minnesota State Patrol, threats against state agency commissioners, lawmakers, and the governor's office more than doubled in a single year, from 19 in 2024 to 50 in 2025, with multiple cases being referred for criminal charges. And we all know what happened in June of 2025, when our own Minnesota State Legislator, Speaker Emeritus Melissa Hortman, her husband Mark, and her dog Gilbert were killed. And Senator John Hoffman and his white Yvette were seriously wounded.
Thank you.
This was a result of politically motivated shootings at their homes. And we also know that this threat was significant, with a number of us in this room and in this legislative body also on a hit list. And that included myself and my husband. And just last week, a Republican colleague in the Senate, there was a threat that was thwarted. Someone threatening to kill people at the Capitol. What's unfortunate is that these are not isolated incidents. a part of a broader national pattern of political violence. The U.S. Capitol Police reported a dramatic increase in threats against elected officials, families, staff, with thousands of concerning communications, violent messages, and direct threats investigated in recent years. In 2024 alone, nearly 9,500 threats against federal lawmakers were investigated, the highest number in recent years and more than double from a decade ago. And the data out of the University of Massachusetts tells us threats don't favor one party over another, except if you're a woman or you're a minority, then you have an increased level of threat. So while that is national data that I just shared, Minnesota's situation mirrors that trend, both in frequency of threats and the severity of attacks. And these incidents include stalking, doxing, direct threats, violent plots. They show up in all sorts of different ways, from phone calls to drones outside of legislators' homes. Without dedicated resources, current protective and threat assessment capabilities are limited. Without dedicated investment, authorities face limitations in real-time threat detection, analysis, and mitigation, especially outside of normal business hours and outside the walls of this Capitol. This put lives at risk, and not only do these conditions threaten not only individual safety, but they impact This not only put lives at risk, and not only do these conditions threaten individual safety, but they impact how we function as a government. We have been talking with the Department of Public Safety and our state patrol on this bill. I'm going to pass it over to Rep. Noor, who's going to share a little bit more about what this bill does. But I just want to make two points. One is it's important that we talk about how we set something out where we can collaborate and best prioritize coordinated response plans and communication when it comes to protective services for all of us. And the second thing is that I want to make sure that we are working in partnership so that the language reflects how we can best operate both efficiently and effectively. I'll introduce Rep. Noor.
Thank you very much, Representative Green. Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
You're a testifier. You got to introduce yourself for everybody.
Well, yes. State Representative Mahmoud Noor represents District 60B in Minneapolis. As we are sitting here today, we're all reminded of that June 14. We can never forget because our lives have changed. The murder of Speaker Melissa Hartman's husband and their dog, the attempted assassination of our friend, Senator John Hoffman, his wife, Yvette, and also their daughter, Hope. And knowing that most of us were on a hit list. That is a day that we will never forget when we get the call early in the morning telling us, do not open your door. Never have I thought that I'm going to sacrifice my life for the work that I do for the people of Minnesota. Members, this is a wake-up call. When that incident happened, there was lack of coordination. There was no clear command in who is in charge of the safety of legislators. Yes, indeed, that we're not going to change what happened that day. I myself, included on that list, never received any guidance coming from any of the departments until later on. That means we have to fill the gaps. We have seen the changes that have happened right here, as when you come in today, you have to go through security checks. So this bill, House File 3739, establishes state officials' protective services. This changes how the work is done by removing prior consultation with the governor to initiate any protective services for legislators. This recognizes that legislature is a co-equal branch of the government and allows our leadership to initiate if there is a credible threat against any of the members. The Capitol Security Services will include not only legislators but also other constitutional officers who are included in this process as principal state officials, members of the legislature, constitutional officers, Supreme Court justices, justices are included in that essence. This is only triggered by our leadership when there is a credible threat. And this unit will be housed within the State Patrol, and the Commissioner of Public Safety still has the authority in the functioning of that entity. Members, in this bill, there will be required reports on credible threats against any officials, not including specific issues that are protected, but also to make sure that we do have credible information of the threat level that is happening to our members. This bill will require at least direct funding of $3.98 million for the fiscal year 2027, an ongoing base of 3.25. The initial amount will include startup costs for the vehicles and the officers who are going to be part of that unit. And this unit will be able to provide services when needed. If not, they can also contract with local law enforcement to pay for those services for members who need additional support. It can be in official capacity services only, not in a campaign process, nothing else. I can give you an example. At an event, it was considered to be high threat level, and the law enforcement entity had to be included in the work that I was supposed to do for the people of Minnesota. That bill is something that was sent to me directly. Without having a guidance or who takes the leadership when it happens and how we will be able to connect with the Sergeant at Arms, both in the chambers, in the House and the Senate, we can no longer be able to have a process whereby we have an entity responsible in providing that protective services. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the opportunity to testify here today.
Thank you very much, Representative Knorr. Are there any other testifiers that you have, Representative Green?
Chair Tapke, no, but can I say just one more comment?
Absolutely.
Before we get to discussion? So, you know, this bill is in a draft, and this hearing right now is meant for discussion and feedback. So I encourage any thoughts so that we can make sure that we are on the right path here.
Thank you. Before we get to Representative Olson, anyone in the audience that would like to testify? All right, seeing none, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the bill. I heard what Chair Knorr had said about how this is supposed to be, you know, timely, or it's supposed to be kind of narrow. It's supposed to have set guidelines or guide rails on to when this type of, you know, protective services is allocated. But I'm not actually seeing that in the bill, and that's my biggest concern. So I'm looking at, you know, page 3.21 to 3.26, where it says the responsibilities of the Capitol Security, and it says, and security and personal protective services for principal state officials, which according to this is now going to be constitutional officers, members of the legislature, or the Supreme Court justices. But I'm not seeing the part where it narrowly defines, you know, what Representative Knorr was talking about that says, you know, because the way I'm reading it, I could, if there was a, you know, credible threat or something that I think is a credible threat, I could require Capitol Security to come down to my home and provide me with protective services. Or if I'm going to some rally or if I'm going to some political event and I feel that there is a threat, then am I supposed to apply to Capitol Security and say you need to be here? Because from my understanding, that's not how this should look. I think that this type of protective services should be limited in scope. It should be here at the Capitol as it is currently, and it should be in the event of what the catastrophic event that occurred in June of last year. Those are the only things in my mind that I can see this fit, whereas in my neck of the woods, it should be my local police force, it should be my local county sheriff. They should be the ones protecting me at home, whereas Capitol Security and the State Patrol's job is to protect us here and potentially do what Representative Knorr was saying, which is coordinate in the event of a catastrophic event, as we saw. So if we can find that narrow scope, I'm not seeing it.
Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Chair Tapke and Member Olson. You know, if you look at, well, one, I acknowledge that we need to have a scope that is understood so that we can understand the different entities and how they work. But if you look at under chapter section 6, between 5.9 and 5.26, you'll see more of scope, and that would include credible threats identified and threat assessments performed. And I think part of what we need to do is address how we provide protective services for all of our public officials and legislators. It looks different for every one of us depending on where we are from and where we're living. We experienced that in June, where different members had very different experiences. Chair Tappy, I'd like to pass it to my testifier, too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, I think if you look at the duties under subdivision 3.6.9, clearly states under line 6.15, this has to happen upon electronic request from the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader, and also defines when that services can be provided under that section.
Representative Olson.
So I appreciate that. Then the question would be, does the Speaker of the House know when something's a credible threat? You know, I don't know. So I appreciate it. I think that if we have clearly defined information on this, I'd be more ample to the acceptance of this. I think absolutely we need to have a discussion on the safety of all the members here and the safety of them when they're at home. I think that we need to know exactly where that is, where the line is, and who's playing on what side of the line. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Representative Scraba, we have a couple of amendments. Would you like to take those first, or you have a question that you'd like to get out of the way quick? Okay, amendments then. Representative Anderson, I have you on the list as well. So we have Representative Joy is taking the A1 amendment. Would you please move your amendment, Representative Joy?
Thank you, Chair Tapke. This amendment here is to make the existing work in the resources they have today, not add in $3.9 million and more. You know, I understand your total intent with this. You know, when elevation, I'm 3.5 hours away from the Capitol, when it starts getting elevated in my area, I've sat down and visited with my local sheriffs, with my city, and if I have an issue, they show up. They were just at an event this weekend for us, you know, just by sitting down and asking them. You know, so to me, to raise another $3.9 million and let the speaker be in control or the people be in control of when we should use it, when we shouldn't, and say we never use it. It's $3.9 million allocated to that department when we have Minnesota not being affordable right now and things we've got to change. So I guess this amendment is just to use the intent but just keep the resources under their budget now and not add any more. Thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. And thank you. Thank you, Member Joy. You know, I spoke with the Department of Public Safety, and there is an increase in demand for this work. And so when the demand increases, resources have to increase. I spoke about that earlier when I opened. You know, it would be, I think, an impossible ask to create this protective services work and for Capitol Security for them to add this level of work and not have it negatively impact the work that they're already doing. And I appreciate the funding piece, but I also think the safety and security of our members here and our public officials is what our taxpayers actually, I would argue, want to support. I know I have gotten a flood of outreach. Doesn't matter the political party. What can we do as a state? Do you feel safe? How are you managing things? And I think that's an important piece. And the other piece that I want to just reference to is what we learned in June, if anything, is that we need coordination. We need coordination of communication, and we need coordination of all the different law enforcement entities in our state working together when it comes to our threat assessment. So.
Thank you. Further discussion, Representative Centimera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I'm just going to say I'm disappointed by today's hearing. I after we all went through June 14th and, you know, spoke with, you know, members of our caucuses and members across the aisle, I had felt like we had gone through something shared, and then I'm coming to this committee hearing today, and I'm feeling like maybe we didn't have a shared experience of this because the idea that we would not change anything about our security after a member of our community lost their life is just maddening to me. I just have to start by saying that. And I guess, you know, I don't know if it has been shared with people, just the differences in law enforcement based, you know, based on capacity. Like, I think in Minneapolis, we had a much different experience than maybe some other people did. I had colleagues that said, you know, I woke up the morning of June 14th with a cop in my driveway, and the cop didn't leave for 3 days, and the cop came and sat in my house when I had to leave and sat with my kids. And so some people had a really positive experience. In Minneapolis, we had a really different experience. You know, it took some police officers 24 hours to show up at people's house. We had a member of our caucus who was basically sheltering in place until a police officer knocked on her house. It had been told to us that no police officers will come, just one person. They'll always come in two so that you actually know it's a police officer. And then ended up just one person freaked out this member a lot, who was just home alone in her house with no communication. So, we're really scared after that about just saying, leave it up to local law enforcement and you can get your needs met. I do not have a belief right now that, like, our local law enforcement is going to be able to offer the unique and kind of tailored security that I think we actually need to do this job. And it's really weird to have to make legislation that is literally about keeping you and your family safe. I don't think any of us want to be in this position. It feels really uncomfortable. And I also think about future generations of lawmakers. Like, I'm on the recruitment committee trying to talk to people about running for office right now. And, like, I talk to a lot of moms who are like, you could not pay me. I mean, number one, we don't get paid enough to do this. But number two, like, you could not pay me enough money to do a job that risks the security of my family. So I don't think it's just about who sits in these seats right now. It's like, how are we ever going to get good lawmakers to want to do this work if we can't even say we'll do the bare minimum to try to keep you all safe? So I appreciate this bill. I think we have to change something about our approach. It clearly was not working. You know, I think there's work we can do about the way our security looks here, and I think we are doing that work. But this came into our homes. This came into our lives, and we need something that acknowledges kind of this new frontier we are in. I hope we can move to a different political moment where maybe in a few years this appropriation doesn't make sense because we have toned down the rhetoric and found a way to make our streets safer and not have people have weapons that can hurt us. But in the meantime, I don't see how we can do this job with fidelity if we're constantly worried about our lives and our families. So thank you.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So June 14th, I woke up, had the frantic voicemails. I grabbed my elderly dog and a pair of clothes and went to my mom's house. And, you know, my cabin property is on public records, and so I had to get my husband and my kid out of the cabin and into a hotel room in Baxter. So I was at my mom's until that Sunday night, that Monday actually, and the minute I went home to grab some clothes, take a shower, and come down to the Capitol where we were having kind of our group morning session, as it kind of was. The second I pulled into my house, I got an email from Pizza Hut saying, your pizza's on its way. So then I call my husband. I'm like, did you order a pizza? Like, why is this happening? No. I had to call 911 because I got an email that somebody had ordered a pizza to my house. And not only did they order one, they ordered three. And it happened the second I got home. That tells me that someone knows where I live and knows when I'm home. And they wanted to just mess with me. I'd say something more explicit, but we were told not to swear in committee. So, and that was just me at my house. If my family had been there, I think I would have lost it. And luckily, I do have a police force. I live in a small city with, you know, I think our full force is 12 police, 10 police. I know most of them. You know, I've got the chief's cell phone number, and they were great. But again, my city is very small. And so they have the capacity to do that. And not only that, I have a freaking parking lot in my front yard where anytime somebody is parking out there in the front, in the overflow lot, I think that they're out there to, with a gun. I have to run from my car to my house because I don't know what that person sitting out in the parking lot is doing. These are the kind of fears that we're living with. These are the kind of fears our families are living with. And it's one of the reasons that I didn't want to continue in this work. I didn't want to continue to put my family at risk. And if we don't have people who are willing to do this job, what's going to happen to this institution? Thank you.
Representative Green, any final comments on the amendment, the A1 amendment? Hold on to that for a second. Chair Kosnick.
Thanks. And not to belabor the point, I appreciate the amendment of Representative Joy. And I acknowledge that, you know, there's a real threat and sometimes it's more intense than others. And but as public officials, you know, we experience it, whether it's how Representative Cagle shared or other events when you're going to your endorsement convention or just the grocery store, you know, it's out there. So I acknowledge the threat and the intent of what we're trying to address here, and I'm glad we're laying it over to continue to kind of flesh this out and have the discussions. And to that, the point of the amendment simply has that line 1.3, that we use existing funds. We have a lot of money in the state. The departments were granted their operating and maintenance request last year when we passed a budget that was pretty substantial. I get that they might say they've had to expend it, and we got to rearrange how we spend our dollars. So whether it's 4,000 or 4 million, we have the funds currently. And so I appreciate what Representative Joy is highlighting with this amendment. We'll leave it for discussion. But the point being is that we have a lot of money in the state. Continuing to add to the base budgets is problematic, and thank you for pointing that out. And I do want to acknowledge Representative Spencer Murr. I've talked to a lot of the Minneapolis delegation and your experiences after in the day that long weekend. It was a very different experience in the relationship with your local law enforcement than maybe what Representative Cagle had or what I was fortunate to have in Lakeville. And so I've talked to some of your delegation about that and recognize where you're coming from and hear what you're saying. And I, you know, it's unfortunate the way it was handled in certain cities and not in others. This is a great topic. It's something, unfortunately, that we should be talking about. But adding to the continued base budget still needs to be part of that discussion. So I am supportive of Representative Joy's A1 amendment to use existing funds.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Representative Kraft, and then Representative Green, and then we'll close with Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, examining funding, where it is in the agency and all that, I think is a fine thing that this committee can do. We shouldn't be doing it on this bill. Vote no.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. I recommend and encourage my members a no vote on this.
Representative Joy, to your A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, again, you know, when I look at this, this is just using the resources internally. And you know, as we continue to talk about the ongoing threats, just this week, and we had a representative that serves in the House that just had somebody Facebook and say, be careful, you could be the next one shot. And the local sheriff took care of this. The police department took care of this. This is happening, you know, but I think these guys also know they can get it in their way, their funds to do this. We've set up security in the Capitol now. We know they're spending money, having people go through those detectors. I still think so. I recommend a yes vote. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No. No.
The motion does not prevail. All right. We now have an A2 amendment. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A2 amendment. This amendment follows very closely in with my biggest concern, which is the jurisdiction of the Capitol Police, the security, the state troopers, and where that line is. This is in no way trying to cut something out, but what I really want us to do and what I think, who should be in charge of protecting us when we're at home? That's the big question that I have. And I would personally much rather have my local sheriff or my local police be in charge of me and get a phone call from the Capitol Police saying, hey, there's a credible threat. Representative Olson is back home. We need you there, because that police officer could make it in 5 minutes, whereas the nearest Capitol Police officer is 2 hours and 15 minutes away. And so my hope is that we can work through this bill to make it so maybe Capitol Security here has overall jurisdiction, but they work, like, they are the ones who call on the phone and say, you need to do this. You know, make a plan. I think that the reporting aspect of this, maybe looking at a task force of how we can better do this, because just blanket statement saying that the State Patrol and the Capitol Security can do it better and will do it better than my local law enforcement, I don't think that's the case. And I point this out that I completely understand the stories that have been told here. Everyone has their own story of what they experienced. You want to talk about feeling powerless, be 6,200 miles away from your family and having your wife calling you on the phone frantic because someone has been murdered, one of your coworkers has been murdered, and you're in Kuwait. And the best you can do is call your local police officer and say, hey, can you help me out here? And that's the best you've got. So you want to talk about being powerless, like that's about as powerless as I've ever felt. So this is in no way attempting to gut something, attempting to hurt I have bills too that mean a lot to me, and this is, there's an emotion to this. I want us to do this measured. I want us to do this the right way. I want to make sure that the person who's in charge of our protection is the right person for our protection. And so that's the idea behind this amendment. I don't know the answer. I think that there are a lot of other people who have better security understanding than I do, and I think I may have a little bit more than some people. But that's the goal, is to keep us safe in the most efficient, best way possible, and that's why I'm moving this amendment.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. Thank you, Member Olson. You know, I agree with you that we should have, like, a measured approach to this and to make sure that we have the right people doing the right things to keep us all safe. But nowhere in this bill are we saying that the state capitol and state patrol or sergeant of arms can do it better than local law enforcement. What we're saying is that we need to make sure that we have coordination and communication and a dedicated unit focused on this work. So I think I welcome more discussion on this, and I appreciate all that feedback that you just gave. And in my conversations with the Department of Safety and with the State Patrol, is to talk about that. What is the best approach here? But we need, not to talk about the A1 amendment, but we need a dedicated force to do this. This is a huge problem that is growing. I can feel it from everyone in this room. Like, we all feel that. And so I just don't think that we have the capability to say the lines aren't black and white. We can't say this goes on at the Capitol, this goes on at your home. We have learned that. It is 1,000 different ways and 1,000 different different means that it comes at us in different ways. It could be social media. It could be someone following you home. It could be at the grocery store. It could be someone on social media who lives 5,000 miles away. We don't know, but that's why we need that coordinated effort. So I would recommend members vote no on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Green. I just have a question regarding the bill. So if we look at line 630-631, subdivision 4, so section 8, subdivision 4, the agreements with local law enforcement folks, can you explain how, within the context of your bill, Representative Olson's, how that would move forward? Like, how would response happen to this, and how would this, like, in outside of the bill language, like in the real world, how would this kind of thing be handled? Would it be handled by local law enforcement? Would it be handled by state troopers? Would it be handled by Capitol Police, like Capitol law enforcement? Like, how would that work?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Tapke. You know, I think those are really good questions that we need to flesh out. I'm going to pass it to my testifier to answer as well.
Representative Orr.
Thank you, Mr. Chen, members. I think the question about how local law enforcement can get involved, this requires coordination process, even under that subdivision four, instances whereby there's ongoing threat, that you need ongoing safety protocols to really help you do your basic legislative process. Your local law enforcement will be reimbursed through this budget that we're putting out there so that you can get the protection that you need for you and your family, so it does not negate the need to have local law enforcement getting involved in this process.
Thank you, Representative Knorr and Representative Green. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Olson lives 2 hours away. I think what Keeler is, Representative Keeler is like 6 hours away. I live 23 minutes away. You know, Representative Perez Vega lives like 2 minutes away. So when we're looking at this, we can't, like, to use one of the phrases I've heard a lot around here, is one size fits all. And so there might be responses that need emergency assistance, or, you know, St. Paul Police Department is fairly large and has a large jurisdiction. So if there's something happening in St. Paul, you know, we're going to need a little bit of flexibility for some of these folks to respond. And so, again, it looks different in different places. Again, I have like 10 to 12 police officers in my city of, you know, 6,000 people. But Minneapolis and Rochester and Duluth and Spring Lake Park all look different. And so there is going to be different needs for different members. And so I would suggest a no vote on the A2.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. And we're going to spend, just so everybody knows, timing-wise, we're going to spend about 10 more minutes on this bill and then lay it over. It'll come back for future discussion on things. So if we can roll through a couple of these, that'd be great. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Green, for bringing the bill. Representative Olson, I'm actually really concerned about the amendment. Let me explain why. If you think back to that night and what happened and then those days afterwards, the one of the big issues was not knowing who was in charge, was the flow of information not happening from local to central back to local. And it happened at varying speeds depending on your local police force. And there was no one in charge. It was not clear. And what I see this bill trying to do is to make it clear. So in those times when an hour of notification from a local to a central and back could have made a difference of a life, if it's not clear who's in charge and where the information can flow and where the coordination can happen, then I think we lose the effect of what we're trying to do. And so what I see in your amendment is saying that we're going to create this centralized function to be responsible for safety, and our safety extends beyond these walls. And then we're going to put one hand behind their back and say, you know what, you can't look, if there's a threat, you can't look beyond these walls. So I think the special sauce in this is going to be how this is set up and how the relationships are defined between the centralized functions of local law enforcement. And I think this language does a lot of that. But I'm just really concerned that your amendment would basically negate the benefits and precious time that can save lives.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to answer you, but I'll let the author talk to yours. Part of my concern about the whole bill, and especially to this point, is we keep talking. We want to talk through this before we act on it, and because there are some things I believe that are off. my example of where I was and what I was doing is classic in the sense that, let's say I've had some bad threats and I'm on a canoe trip and I'm in the woods and I have the ability to communicate with a satellite phone or with Starlink, either one. I can get out anywhere now, any place. But and I think someone in the woods looks odd. So does a state patrol helicopter or a sheriff's department fly in to come get me, or a boat and motor? I'm in a wilderness area. It's paddle only. Where are the thresholds? Where are the when is it part of my responsibility to take care of myself too? I'm a military guy, situational awareness. I was trained, you know, as infantry and scouting. So I'm constant, and I don't expect everyone else to. And I'm just saying, at some point, how do we discern the threat and who? If you don't know who the threat is coming from, how do you react to it? It's always an after the fact. And one of the things that really kind of upsets me about the whole thing, what's going on, is we have members, when they're running for office, that are pushed, prodded, garbage searched through, treated like threats. And the courts say, well, you're a public official. You're at a different standard. You should be accepting this sort of scrutiny. And I'm like, BS. No, just the opposite. We should be protected more than less. And this is what, for me, this is what this bill is trying to get to. And I'm wondering if that is an avenue that we should be looking at in the courts. Because when I hear a member saying, yeah, the judge won't do anything, they can't do anything because the threshold's so high. And that's not right. That's just not right. Because we're saying here now, no, we're a target. I mean, one of the first things that people ask me, you know, like, what do you do different? Well, I don't leave the house without a weapon now. Not that I want to, not that that's should be right, but what do you do? Well, that makes me feel a little safer. Doesn't make me feel safe at all, but a little, you know, but it's still not, everyone should not have to do that. I agree. That's not right. That's not, but I shouldn't have to do it either. So it gets to this point of how are we going to look at this problem? Because those of us in greater Minnesota, let's say, for example, I'm under threat and I'm in Austin, Texas at a convention. And how does this bill protect me way down there? You know, and how does these are discussions I would love to solve and figure out. Maybe they're not all right there, the answers now, but I think there's a lot of stuff in here that we have to look at. So thank you.
We've had a couple more people, thanks to Representative Scrava's brief comments, add themselves to the list. So Representative Sensenmiller.
Yeah, I can keep it brief. I guess I just want to add on to what Representative Kraft was saying about, I think one of the things that I came out of that night with is I do think we saw what can happen and what can fall through the cracks when we just leave it to local law enforcement. You know, we're trying to figure out what the line is, right? And should law enforcement have to follow you down to Austin? No, I don't think so. Should law enforcement follow you on a canoe trip? No, I don't think so. Do I expect that if a member of our body was shot, that maybe every legislator who lives within 20 miles of them would have police sent to their house in a timely manner? Yes. And like, we didn't see that happen that night. And if it had happened, and if we can improve it, we could have saved the life of our colleagues. And that is the reason for why I don't believe we can just leave it up to every law enforcement to figure it out on their own. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair Ream.
Thank you, Chair Tapke, and thank you, Representative Green, for bringing forward this bill. I certainly think it deserves more discussion. This is a big issue. I know I can echo the statement that people have made about how different members had different responses from their police departments. Some of us were taken right away out of our homes to the highway and brought to a safe, undisclosed location. Other members were waking up at like 7:45 in the morning and told by their spouse that, hey, something's on the news about our speaker. So it was very different. Some people had police cruisers outside their home at 5 in the morning or earlier, and others didn't get any police cruisers outside their home. And I think, you know, right now I'm hearing that our police departments are, you know, they don't have the resources to serve, you know, the needs of some of the lawmakers. You know, we don't have enough resources and money to provide security for everyone. So I do think it needs to be something that's beyond what our local police departments are required to, you know, help with. I think we need to make it more statewide, and it needs to be more impartial. I think the needs go beyond the Capitol for sure. And I would say, after talking to my county sheriff, you know, we had a very different response out in Carver County. We have three lawmakers who serve in the House, or serve in the House and the Senate, and two of us had police cruisers and one didn't. And I'm not pointing fingers, but, you know, my husband and I were on that hit list, and they did find the assassin, the alleged assassin, within what, he was living about 25 minutes from our home. So that was pretty scary. But the biggest problem, I think, was that communication was really poor. So who was in charge of letting my county sheriff know that this had happened? And what, in Carver County, what had happened was my colleague in the neighboring district had called our county sheriff and had said, hey, get police to these homes because this is what's happened. He didn't get, you know, the sheriff in my county did not get the information from a central source. He got it from a representative who's third in line who knew because he had heard from the speaker what had happened. And, you know, I do think we need to have an impartial discussion about how we can protect everyone, because I don't think it's going to be the same for every county or every lawmaker. So, and I do think it goes, this, the need for security goes beyond the Capitol complex. Thank you.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair Tabke. And, you know, I think it's good that we're having this discussion, so I'm not going to belabor a lot of the points, other than to say I know that there's representatives from the Department of Public Safety here, MnDOT. I don't know that Capitol Security is here, but they should be participating in this discussion. I'm glad that you've had some preliminary discussions with them, but as we vet this out, I think there's a lot of things that are being brought up that we as committee members and just rank and file or even chairs of committees aren't fully aware of all the details of what was going on in the chain of command. I think, you know, public safety's here. I'm guessing they might not be real comfortable at the BCA thinking that no one was in charge that morning or throughout that weekend. I actually think they did an incredible job under those circumstances to apprehend the assassin. And then I would be curious through those departments, like, what is the current protocol? And there is policies in place, but they just obviously can't encompass every single situation or threat. That's just the nature of public safety, I think. But I think they're an important voice that's missing in this discussion to be deliberative on how we do this and if we're going to spend another $4 million and does that actually go to what the intent of the bill is. And so I'm glad we're laying it over. I really do sincerely appreciate the discussion and the intent of the bill, but obviously we're not quite ready there. So thank you, Chair Tabke, for laying the bill over.
Representative Green, any closing comments on the A2 amendment?
Thank you, Chair Tabke. I would encourage a no vote for members.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Everything that was discussed as concerns would not be nullified by this amendment whatsoever. So if we're looking at it, this amendment is to be preventing this unit, their responsibilities, their roles from ballooning into an unsustainable amount. All right. So we're talking about these guys and gals have to, their primary function is to protect us anywhere within the state. That means, are they going to hire 201 different individuals and just trail us around? That's not their job, and that wouldn't be efficient utilization of taxpayer dollars, nor would it be a good idea. All this amendment does, it says the Protective Services Unit may only perform its duties and functions within the Capitol area. That means they could sit in an office and they could call the local law enforcement and say, hey, you need to do this. This is a credible threat. If we know who has the jurisdiction, who's in charge, and if they are, in fact, they from the Capitol complex, they create an agreement or there's an understanding, a memorandum of understanding that each sheriff's department has or each city police has, we know who's in charge. We know who's in charge, and we're not expecting this protective services unit to leave the Capitol and run as fast as they possibly can to a squad car so then they can make it to Representative Cagle's 23-minute house, right? There's probably someone closer than 23 minutes away to her house to provide her with that protective services. I would venture a guess there's even a police officer currently right now who is closer to the closest member's home than our Capitol security unit that we've got, right? So you're asking one of our state patrol agents right now to run as fast as they possibly can to the nearest member of this legislature's home. I'm positive there is another peace officer somewhere closer, and that's what I'm talking about. If we narrow the scope and say, we are your responsibility. We are your responsibility. This team has been designed to protect us. Here's your physical gate. This is where you stay. This is where your home is. You can call. You create agreements. It's more efficient in my mind. That's what this is for. That's the purpose of this, to prevent them from having to question if they jump in a squad car and drive to Representative Olson's house, or can they just make a phone call? Can they just get his sheriff to show up at his house? That draws a line, and that's what I think we need. So I would appreciate a yes vote on this. I imagine it's not going to make it. That'll be okay, Mr. Chair. But I also appreciate having this conversation and a continuation of this really important conversation that we're having. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Olson. To the A2 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. All right. We have had a significant amount of conversation about this, so thank you very much, everyone, for that. Representative Anderson is the only one that has not talked that indicated earlier that they would like to talk. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, and I'll be brief. I want to thank you for bringing this. This is very real, and but it's so real that you could have hundreds and hundreds of people. This could balloon into a huge cost. So I think we need to really think about it. How we want to design this. So I'm glad you brought it. It's very real, and if you need help, I think this is something that would be very bipartisan. Taking a look at what's doable. So thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Green, closing comments.
Thank you so much, our Chair Tapke and Representative Anderson for your comments. This is a complex issue. We heard that today. And I think, we have a meeting set up with Department of Public Safety and State Patrol. Representative Scraba, you are invited to join. Anyone else? I do think that we need to get to a place that it does not, we're not going to be able to stop every single thing that happens. But we can do, a lot better job of setting up protocols and understanding roles and understanding how we approach safety for people in our state. And so I think we owe it to ourselves and, as Representative Sensor Mira said, for the future legislators here that will come before us.
Thank you very much, Representative Green. Thank you very much, Representative Knorr. The bill is laid over. Representative Hewitt, House File 3356, welcome to the committee. I move the House File 3356 be re-referred to the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. With that, Representative Hewitt, you have the A2 author's amendment?
I do.
So on your behalf, I'll move the A2 author's amendment. Do you want to briefly explain what that is?
Quickly, it gets the bill in the shape I need it in. There was a situation that it was redundant in what the certification meant, and so this puts it in a better form.
All right, any need discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Hugh, you want to explain your bill, please?
Sure. This is a pretty simple, straightforward bill. Many of you know that my former life was in emergency medical service, but many of you might not know that I wrote a book on how to drive an ambulance. And so I did a lot of research in this area about what you should do with a emergency vehicle once it's done its public service use. And this is problematic. Yes, June 14th is a part of this, but this is more in depth than June 14th. This has been a problem for all over the country. of people posing as officers, people posing as ambulance, going to jump in calls to try to get to the person before the actual ambulance does, and also even in fire situations. So we just want to put out protocols, and yes, this is going to take some funding, but not highway trunk bonds like I was asked about. So it's going to go over to public safety. So with that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Chair Kozik, you have a DE1 amendment.
Thank you. Thank you for addressing the issue. I think the solution is lacking. What we need to do is enforce the laws that we currently have, and if they seem to be not working to provide a disincentive for people to break the law, rather than create a cost and a burden to our local cities and counties, what we're going to do with the DE amendment is just increase the penalty, because I think it'll be just as effective as what you're proposing in the original bill. And so I ask for member support on the DE1 that increases the current penalties, and we can enforce that as equally effective.
Chair Kozik moves the DE1 amendment. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, on that suggestion. We have discussed that, and to be honest with you, we got on board the MPPOA, the Minnesota Public Safety, the State Patrol, and a number of the actual Minnesota police chiefs, and they all thought this is the right place to start. Their concern was the cost. We would address the cost in public safety.
Further questions? Seeing none, closing comments. Chair Kozik.
Thank you. Additionally, in addition to the difference of opinion on the effectiveness of the underlying bill, we've established a bad habit in the legislature of passing bills to other committees that are open appropriations and don't have fiscal notes, which I don't believe we have one on this one. I have not seen one. And so additionally, for that purpose, I'm suggesting a yes vote on the DE and then overall a no vote.
Thank you, Chair Kozik. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. No. The motion does not prevail. Discussion on the bill. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hewitt, we had a conversation in the hall just last week, and my biggest concern, whereas I see that your amendment, it kind of cleared a little bit up, so I appreciate some of the changes that you've had, some deletions of things that may have been a little bit complex or kind of crazy to deal with. But the one thing that really gets me a little bit concerned is the required removal of outline of an emblem. That, in my mind, may in fact result in the need to entirely repaint a vehicle, which could be arduous. And if we're going to make it so that the owner of these vehicles should just take them to the junkyard and have them crushed, that's not really good for taxpayer dollars. You know, if we're going to make it so difficult to sterilize this vehicle to the point where it's not worth it to the public to even sell or to buy, you might as well just throw it to the junkyard and say the taxpayer dollar of, you know, some of these vehicles are $120,000, $300,000. A fire truck is worth a vast sum of money. And if we have to remove emblems and repaint the entire vehicle, now that seems a little out of line. I think we see regularly individuals whose vehicles had a magnet on it that said something, or it was wrapped in a different business, and no one says, oh, that used to be a cop car because it had an emblem that was removed from it. They look at it and say, I wonder what that was all about. I completely agree with the concept of, you know, flashing lights, a big siren, those kind of things. But I think when we're saying, in order to sell this to a private individual, you're going to need to repaint your entire vehicle, that may be a little bit further than where we really need to go.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Olson, pro temp speaker. I like to be recognized that way. So, I agree with you that this is not meant to devalue, and all they do have to do is remove the emblems. Most of them are doing it now, and that works fine. Where we see the crimes is when someone goes and does their own re-embling, which is a whole nother. It's like, we need to look into lights. But lights isn't this bill because of, I got to tell you, I've looked into it several times, and I've looked into this since I started. These are all things that we're going to touch other areas on, but I don't feel that this is something that's going to deter the value of buying these. They're still getting $3,000, and the emblem is still, like you were talking about. Talked to a few chiefs about it, and they said, no, we've never had a problem. We just need to get our identification off it is what they want to do. So I do invite any possible things you can send over to hopefully if it goes to public safety, we can work on together. But I don't I've asked that same question because they're doing it now. They're pulling the emblems. So, and again, this doesn't mean that they can't sell that car to another public safety entity. They just, when it goes public, the vehicle's beat up, it has to just get, it has to be decommissioned. Thank you, though, for that.
Further questions? All right, seeing none, Representative Hewitt, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this. I'm hoping we can get it over to public safety. The reason that this has been in my mind, not only because of the situation we all saw happen on June 14th, it happened way before that. My own niece was raped by a person posing as a police officer, pulled her over with lights and sirens on their vehicle. To this day, the officers that investigated it said they don't know where the vehicle came from, but basically, we can't, and that's what we're seeing more around the country is that use of a vehicle like this. So I think as legislators, we never want that or what happened on June 14th or any time to happen to any of us or our children or our daughters. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and on that, I hope for a yes vote.
Thank you very much, Representative Hewitt. With that, we renew my motion that House File 3356 as amended, we re-refer to the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed say no. The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Next is House File 3695, Representative Johnson. Welcome to the committee. Move House File 3695 be re-referred to the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Johnson, you have an A1 author's amendment. I move the A1 author's amendment on your behalf. Will you please explain it quick?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Tabke. The A1 just adds one more group to the listed folks who would be on that task force to standardize IDs.
Thank you very much. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Will you please explain your bill quick for us?
Thank you, Chair. This bill was born out of a lot of conversations that happened after June 14th with the murder of Melissa and Mark Hortman, as well as the shooting of John and Yvette Hoffman. One of the common components of those conversations was that any one of us would have opened the door. When you have somebody that comes to your door dressed like law enforcement, dressed like fire, dressed like EMS, whatever it is, there's that implicit trust that allows those folks to do their jobs. And I think that was one of the things that so many of our members had that brought up is they would have opened that door. So trying to figure out how we can better identify law enforcement, we talked about things ranging from banning or standardizing uniforms, things like that. But one of the things that we kind of settled on was figuring out how to standardize IDs so that anybody from any agency can see one of these IDs and know that that person is supposed to be there. And in doing that, we talked with I don't know how many different groups, from law enforcement groups to fire groups to EMS groups. We talked to unions. We talked to state agencies. And this concept of standardizing IDs was something that a lot of folks felt like they could get behind. They had questions, they had ideas. Some of those ideas were, how do we make this useful beyond just having an ID for somebody to carry around? And some of that was, how can we store our certificates, our qualifications, our training on those things so that if there's a big incident, think natural disasters, think wildland fire, think a mass shooting, I-35 bridge collapse, for example, where you have responders from various agencies around the state, around the region, coming into a spot like that and being able to scan somebody in. For example, I'm an EMT. I used to be a SWAT medic. I've got training in urban search and rescue. I've got hazardous materials training. So when I scan in and they're like, they look at it and say, well, we need EMTs over here. They know that I have the training, the qualifications, and they can immediately send me somewhere where I can be useful. But with all those discussions and all those different ideas, we figured a task force would be a good way to standardize that stuff across those different groups so that they can all have their voice at the table. Ultimately, they're the ones that are responsible for carrying and using these things. So some of the things that this task force would be tasked with, should these things be hard copies that get handed out, or should they be digital? Should they be, what should happen when somebody leaves an agency? How do we get them back? How and when should they be carried? What certs and qualifications should be on there, and who controls that part? Should they be issued by local organizations, or should they be issued by the state? And that's what this bill does, is it creates a task force to look at all those things with the stakeholders at the table and answer those questions. And that is my bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. Questions? Representative Scraba.
Back in the day when I was a mayor, Minnesota Mayor Conference from the League of Minnesota Cities, we had three mayors come and speak to us. One was from the mayor of Ramsey, one was the mayor of Cold Spring, and one was the mayor of Granite Falls. And they talked about identification. When you have an event in your community, the mayor of Ramsey worked in St. Paul, tried to get to his community, and they wouldn't let him through the roadblock. His town blew up. Said, I'm the mayor, and you're Santa Claus. You know, I mean, you got to have something that says you who you are. So we kind of went into this, the community I represented, and said, you know, this makes sense. Everyone should have a badge, you know, which we ended up paying for, which worked as long as everyone stayed with it, and then it kind of just went away. You know, no one has them anymore, and it was like the whole idea is to show the public that you are who you are and you say who you are. I'm just curious. I mean, I get the concept, really understand the concept, but how do you standardize a state, you know, how do you standardize Duluth Fire Department between Moorhead Fire Department? You know, where do we, how do we do that? So I think the task force is, you know, it's an idea, but I'm trying to figure out it's a big idea. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Scraba. And that's some of the duties of this task force, is what that would look like. Is it going to have a picture, have who they work for, possible identifiers, other things on there, so that it isn't just Duluth's badge versus Ely's badge versus St. Paul's badge versus all these different variations of it, so that it's very simple to identify it and say, okay, Pete Johnson, firefighter, City of Duluth, so on and so forth. So the idea being that we do standardize it across all those things, because there is value in that, having, you know, when you have these incidents or you have these times where a bunch of people are showing up, to be able to identify people as who they say they are.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Chair Kosick, did you have anything you needed to add? Or okay. Representative Johnson, closing comments.
Thank you, Chair. A lot of the discussion that, you know, we hear today talks about legislation that we're trying to pass to solve or answer to something terrible that happened. And in one of these meetings that we had with these different stakeholders, somebody said that you cannot legislate evil out of our communities. And they're right. But what we can do and what we should be doing is everything that we can possibly do to put deterrents or roadblocks or make it harder for people to do terrible things like that, because maybe we do catch them before something terrible happens. So thank you all for the conversation. Appreciate a yes vote to send this to public safety.
Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. I just want to make clear for everybody that this has money coming out of the general fund, which would not be coming out of our target. This would be a public safety side of things there. So this is not anything that would be a transportation-related expense. And with that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. I don't think that I renewed my motion, the House File 3695, as amended, be re-referred to public safety. Is that clear enough for things? Do we need to re-vote? Are we good? Okay, good. Thank you. All right, any further comments? Chair Kosnick, you need?
No, we'll look forward to a good discussion on Wednesday about autonomous vehicles. And trying to remember what the other bills are, but again, that's kind of a policy in progress. So members, willing to have a good, robust discussion to flesh out some of the things, especially since that's newer legislation.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Chair Kosick. With that, we're adjourned.